Welcome to Nature Now, an original production by KPTZ Volunteers. Nature Now is a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners. Care of Nature Now at kptz.org.
Welcome. We're your guest hosts for Nature Now today. I'm Lorna Smith, Executive Director for Western Wildlife Outreach, and with me is...
Daryl Smith. I am a senior advisor and wildlife biologist. Lorna and I have been doing this work for about 30 years or so with large carnivores and wildlife of all types and habitat work, and here we are now in Port Townsend.
And we partner frequently with state and federal agencies to get out the message on how the public can live safely, work safely, and play as well in bear, wolf, and cougar country. So during today's program, we're going to be discussing the current status of black bears and cougars on the Olympic Peninsula and other areas in Western Washington, as well as providing safety tips for recreating and living in these areas that are occupied by large carnivores. We'll be offering you intriguing glimpses into the lives of these amazing animals.
The next thing, though, on our program, we're going to play you a mystery sound. No hints on this, because it's possible you've heard this before, but it's very intriguing and very interesting.
It's a busy time out there in the natural world around us. There's many black-tailed deer fawns still with spots being observed, and we're asking all drivers to please slow down and be alert for the deer that are crossing our roads. Just the other day, one of our resident fawns at Cape George was hit and killed by a hit-and-run driver. Please give him a break.
The leading cause of wildlife-mediated deaths in North America is collisions with deer on the roadway, and we have lots of deer. We all know that. So bear in mind, this is a very active time right now for deer. We've had numerous animals hit near Cape George, where we live, for example. We had a deer ourselves and demolished our car about 3 years ago. So bear that in mind when you're on the roads.
So let's move along to some other observations. Do you want to tell us about the orcas we've been seeing?
It's been interesting to us. We've spent a little bit more time this summer at our home in Cape George. We've lived here now for about 6 years. We've been seeing more and more orcas, primarily transient orcas that are seem to be feeding on the seals, many of which haul out on Protection Island. There have been several transient groups. I think we've seen about four in the last 2 months. And of course, many of you are familiar with the issues with our southern resident whales as well, too. You've heard the plaintive story about the female who lost her calf.
And, of course, our southern resident killer whales are only fish eaters, so that's the big difference between those two populations.
So the other thing that we have noticed as well, too, is that this has been a banner year for birds. I think we're into our third brood of goldfinches, hummingbirds. We're getting probably our third brood of hummingbirds on us that are coming to our feeders right now. Things won't slow down for some time until many of these birds migrate to the south in the next month or so.
But you can still see the real treat of barn swallows feeding their young if you visit the San Juan Taqueria, where they've had two broods of barn swallows raised right out in their outside courtyard. Now, let's switch over to today's topic, living safely with black bears and cougars as our neighbors. We're really fortunate where we live here on the Olympic Peninsula. We have healthy populations of wildlife. Daryl, what can you tell us about the black bears and cougars that live with us here?
Well, as we've told people, Lorna, we're very fortunate to live here in this corner of the world. This area really is, as we tell people, this is big league nature. If you have an interest in marine wildlife or terrestrial wildlife, if you want to get into the alpine and subalpine areas, you want to get to the open coast or several different kinds of marine environments, you can do it from right here. We have a substantial amount of wilderness very close to us. Everybody knows that we're on the outskirts of Olympic National Park as well as several wilderness areas. We have a good, healthy population of deer, as everybody knows, who spent any time at all in Port Townsend or at Cape George or any other community. But also anywhere that deer live, we have cougars. We could talk about these animals for a long, long time. We also have some black bear here. And we're also fortunate that we have a world-renowned cougar expert who lives in the area. Dr. Mark Elbrock is helping Kim Sager of the Elwha tribe right now, doing a mini study on cougars in the region. Also known as mountain lions, cougars have got 30 or more different names. Cougars exist from Alaska down to Tierra del Fuego. Lorna and I lived in Costa Rica for several years, and we also had cougars there, as well as jaguars.
So we have visited with Mark quite a bit, Daryl, and some of his recent research in the Tetons discovered some very interesting things about the social lives of cougars. Do you want to talk about that for just a minute?
That's just interesting. I graduated, my undergraduate degree in wildlife was in 1974. It was a long time ago, and back then, we didn't know that coyotes were social. In fact, until very recently, we thought cougars were famously antisocial. Mark uncovered the cougars actually have a substantial social structure, which is usually male and 2 to 3 females with their young who live in overlapping territories. And we also know from years of research here in Washington State where cougars have been shot or killed to control in areas where people have been concerned about cattle depredations, primarily in the northeastern part of the state. It actually makes things worse because you disrupt social structure. So that was the first clue that many of us had, that there is a social structure in cougars. They share kills. They hunt alone. They don't hunt like lions do in Africa, but they share kills. And they're just simply much more interesting socially than we had ever thought. So we have, in the Olympic Peninsula, we just did some back-of-the-envelope calculations. We have a substantial number of cougars in the Olympic Peninsula. Yeah, the Olympic Kitsap Peninsula together have probably 250 cougars or so, which is about a density of about 2 cougars every 40 square miles. We have about double that many black bears or even more. Actually, it's about 4 or 5 times as many black bears because they occur in higher densities. They're omnivores. Omnivores have a whole lot more food available to them. Black bears eat typically about 5% or less of their diet is meat. Cougars is virtually 100%.
So for many, many years, the practice was to counter predations by these animals on mostly domestic livestock. They would go out and kill primarily the cougars or coyotes. But that actually, over time, they've discovered that's not working well. And as I understand, when you target the cougars, when you target that big tomcat, the big cougar male that's holding the territory, if you kill him off, then
what happens is that it's very hard to get the right cougar. The hound hunter might go out with hounds and they strike a trail. Then they'll just shoot the most visible cougars they see. And oftentimes, those are the males or females that are the sort of keystone to the social structure. And when they're gone, the male's gone, you got juvenile males coming in. They don't know how to be adults yet. Fighting with each other, they may go after the females and harass them. So it just disrupts everything. But we don't have much of a problem with that here on the peninsula because we don't have all that many cattle to worry about. And there's not very much public rangeland. So fortunately, the good folks at the Department of Wildlife, I've got conflict specialists in the area. You can contact them if you have issues. We lose a few llamas here. And we'll talk a little bit more about safety in a second. But black bears, on the other hand, switching to black bears, we have good numbers of black bears, especially in the Olympic National Park area. And many of us know that one of the best ways to see black bears is to walk the Elwha River Trail when it isn't really crowded, or to go up to Hurricane Ridge with a scope and binoculars. And all of our black bears, by the way, are black. Throughout much of the West, black bears are brown or cinnamon color. For example, in Arizona, almost all black bears are brown. So unfortunately, we have these names for bears, black for black bears and brown for brown bears. They're named after colors, but it doesn't apply very much.
So in a lot of places, it's believed that bears hibernate because of the cold weather. Well, in Western Washington, we don't get that kind of cold, and yet bears are still hibernating. Why is that?
Let me clear one thing up real quickly here that a lot of people don't know, and that is that bears actually do hibernate. It used to be that we all knew that bears hibernated, and then we went for a period of time where we said, no, that's torpor. But no, in fact, it's a profound sleep, and they do, in fact, hibernate. And they do it because of low food. So everything that a bear is concerned about, and this is the key issue with bears, is getting enough food to make it through the winter. And they've got to make an extra 100 pounds for a 300-pound black bear, make it 70 pounds. I'm thinking grizzly bears. The female has got to have about another 40 or 50 pounds to be able to have cubs. By the way, you never see what appear to be pregnant female black bears because their cubs are born in the den and they're born about the size of kittens in December and January. Then they don't emerge until April or May sometime, but they're tiny. The other point to think about is that black bears are extraordinarily easy to live with. The big issue is you don't want them to eat your trash, to eat or your neighbor's trash. If they don't do that, black bears simply are not a problem.
So we'll be getting into more of those safety discussions in a minute. We spend a lot of time recreating outdoors here on the Olympic Peninsula, and we all know what those primary safety considerations are before you go out. You need to have enough water, bring some extra food along and clothing. But then there are other things you need to know when you're out there recreating about being aware of where you are and being aware of what wildlife around you. So what kind of signs would you look for maybe to know that you were in bear or cougar country?
Well, just realize that if you're in the woods around here, you're in bear and cougar country. You always are. Like I said earlier, if you have deer around you or elk, you have cougar because cougars feed primarily on deer and elk. Females weigh about 105 pounds, feed primarily on deer. Males, up to about 160, 170 pounds, feed primarily on elk. But they also eat lots of beaver and raccoons, for example. The ELWA had a cougar and bobcat study a couple of years ago and illuminated a lot of this for us. The biggest issue if you're out in the woods is you've got to worry about falling down off a cliff or being swept away in a stream or something. I used to do search and rescue work when I was in graduate school years ago, and we kept busy rescuing people who had issues like that. We never encountered an issue where somebody was attacked by a bear or a cougar. In fact, to put all this into some kind of perspective, and some of you folks have heard us talk about this before, in all of North America, there are about 380 million of us, give or take. On average, about 3 people are killed every year by all large carnivores combined, primarily grizzly bears. 3 people. And we were making this point here at a show not too long ago, and a guy came up to us and said, hey, you know, look, I sell elevators, and I service them. And 40 people die every year on elevators. So deer, about 120 to 140 people are killed in the U.S. every year by deer, primarily by collisions. In Washington State, to get closer to home here, we have only ever lost one person to a black bear, and that was in 1974, the year I graduated from Washington State University as an undergrad. And 2 people now, in all recorded history, have been killed by cougars. We're a populous state. 7.5 million of us, we spend a lot of time in the woods. These animals, if they wanted to get us, would be getting 30 of us a day rather than 1 or 2 in a century.
And yet it's easy to understand why people who are familiar with that recent news about the person that was killed, the mountain biker up near North Bend, are afraid. They hear that. It makes big news. It makes big headlines.
Absolutely. Right.
So we have been changing our safety recommendations, not based so much on the fact that there's actual increased safety concerns, but because we want to make people feel safe and confident when they are out recreating.
Yes.
So we're making changes to our cougar brochure in coordination with Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, as well as we have changed our cougar public service announcement. Can you tell us what some of those new recommendations are?
We haven't changed very much. Having tried to put the danger of these animals in perspective for you all, we still have to bear in mind these are big, powerful animals that could kill you. You need to be situationally aware all the time. And this is the primary thing. Be aware. Some people make a lot of noise, and that's helpful sometimes. We are biologists. We like to see animals, so we don't make very much noise. But then we're keeping our eyes open all the time, too. The thing that happened in North Bend with a couple of mountain bikers was very unusual. I'll leave you guys all to look the story up here a little bit. The cougar was skinny but not emaciated. It was just aberrant behavior as far as we can tell. What happened is that the cougar essentially attacked. The 2 folks warded the cougar off with their bicycles, but they stuck around, evidently, rather than leaving the vicinity. And the cougar came back, attacked the survivor. The survivor's companion ran away. The cougar dropped the survivor, ran after the person who ran away. And this is a tragic situation.
And they were killed at that point.
And then they were killed. The other person left in shock. What we tell you to do is this. We tell you, first of all, be situationally aware. And now we're telling people it is not a bad idea, especially if you're a mountain biker or a trail runner, or if you're in fear of your safety, to carry a can of bear spray and know how to use it. And if you carry bear spray, you need to have it where you can grab it now. Bear spray is non-lethal. You can use it to protect a friend or a dog that you've a companion dog that you've brought along. If they're attacked by an animal, you can spray them both. And in 1 hour, your friend will love you again and your dog will be okay. It's almost 98% effective in warding off grizzly bear attacks. And it is pepper spray. It is not mace. It's not tear gas. And it works immediately.
But it has to be labeled bear spray.
Yes, that's correct. But it works extremely well. But that's kind of a last resort. Mostly what will happen is when you're out in the woods and you encounter a large carnivore, a cougar or a bear, face it. Look at it. We used to tell you not to look them in the eyes, but you want to do that. You want to be the dominant person out there. And what Mark Elbrock said, the cougar expert that I like, is he said, look human. And that's a good point. Young animals especially may never have seen a human. Maybe they've heard you, they've smelled you, and now they see you and smell you, and they wonder what the heck you are. So there's some curiosity there. You don't want to encourage that curiosity. So raising your arms, yelling at them, if raising your arms and looking at them and slapping your hands together doesn't do any good, then normally they'll go away. That's almost 100% of all the incidents. If these animals were to attack you, there are two things that you should do. First of all, if you got bear spray, use it. The key is volume. This is a 6 ounce or 8 ounce can. It'll empty in 6 seconds. So you spray it in the direction, and it's not a stream. It's a large spray. Spray, hold it down a little bit, and a 1 or 2 second spray will release a big orange cloud. If you don't have bear spray, or if this isn't effective for some reason, and these animals do attack you, I'm talking about black bears and cougars, not grizzly bears, then fight them back. This is not a death match. They're not trying to, this isn't a game to them. They have to be able to survive. And that almost always is effective. Do not run away. That's a big issue that we have to
say. That's right, especially with cougars. And we feel that running was probably what prompted the second attack on the mountain bikers.
Have any of you ever run away from a dog? or in my case, a Holstein bull?
Or played with a cat with a laser, and you know they like to chase after their prey. The other area I wanted to address was we hear a lot about people saying, well, what if I come between a black bear mother and her cubs? Aren't I in real danger? And
that's a good point.
Not with black bears, because black bear mothers, if they sent their cubs, are in danger. If they're around people, they send them up a tree. And once they're up that tree, she believes they're safe, and she'll back away a little ways and let the people usually leave the scene. So it's not like a grizzly bear.
We do have a few grizzly bears in this state, but they're mostly primarily in the northeastern part of the state in small populations. We call them ghost bears. They rarely come into people's camp. People almost never see them. As Lorna pointed out, the Department of Wildlife and all the biologists we talked to aren't aware of an incident of people being attacked by black bears because they've gotten between them and their cubs. Now, that doesn't mean that the black bears won't rush at you real quick or snap their jaws, but you've been warned and you need to be smart about this stuff and aware.
So just to get back to the basics about bear and cougar safety, the biggest concern in protecting humans and also your domestic livestock and pets is keep food sources away from them. That's the biggest source of problems. Good fencing, keeping your livestock in at night. So on our webpage, westernwildlife.org, there's lots more safety information. We also have, of course, our linked Facebook page, Twitter, Instagram pages, and you'll find lots more safety tips there. And we just encourage you all to go out, enjoy the outdoors, and if you happen to see a bear or cougar, lucky you.
Now let's hear the mystery sound again. That's the sound of a young cougar kitten, generally a contact call between mother and baby. Very uncat-like, but very interesting. Now, here are some events coming up in our area. The Olympic Peninsula Audubon Society has a Purple Martin outing at 8:30 a.m. on Friday, August the 10th at the Three Crabs area in Squim. It's a chance to see how many young martin have fledged and to see the birds before they stage up and head to South America. As I was coming in this morning, I saw birds staging up as well, too, in our area. The Olympic Peninsula Audubon Society has its next weekly bird walk at 8:30 a.m. on Wednesday, August the 15th. Meet at the Dungeness River Audubon Center at the Railroad Bridge Park in Squim. Check the group's website for information on both events. The Jefferson Land Trust has a work party at the Snow Creek Uncas Preserve at 10 a.m. on Tuesday, August the 14th, to remove invasive holly in order to open up the area for native forest plants and processes. Check the JLT website at saveland.org for more information. That's all for this episode of Nature Now. We hope you enjoy our weekly look at the natural community where we live. Contact Nature Now hosts if you have comments, observations, or ideas. Email us at naturenow, that's one word, naturenow@kptz.org. Nature Now airs at 12:05 p.m. on Wednesdays, with repeats here on KPTZ 91.9 FM, Thursdays at 5:05 p.m., and Saturdays at 12:30 p.m. Recent podcasts are also available on the KPTZ website. Thank you for listening.
Nature Now is produced by Nan Evans and edited by Charlie Fleischman.
Today's closing music is Cougar, played by Johnny Whitehorse.